Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace. Final hour coming at you from Barrel House, Predators, and the Sharks tonight. Nashville trying to stretch the point streak to 15, which would tie a franchise record. Our coverage begins at 6 o'clock with Max Herz here. And, of course, Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 and up and in Tennessee to bet. Now, let's talk some brackets. Mm-hmm. Joe Rexroad is on the line with us, and he called our show last week under an assumed name that we figured out. We uncovered the scandal very quickly. We knew it was him. But now here we are. The brackets are out there, and so we have some more questions for Joe. Joe, thanks for coming on with us.
Yes, Joe from Nolensville here. I'm hoping I can become a regular contributor, and yes, good to be with you guys.
All right, Joe, let's hit you with the zinger that we kicked around, D-Mace and I did yesterday when the brackets came out. And that was, among the teams, take Tennessee out of the mix and look at the draw for Auburn, Alabama, and Kentucky, and tell me who you think has the best path to go deep into the tournament. And we put that as a deep run to the Final Four. Not win the national championship, but go deep to the Final Four.
Okay, so Auburn, you said Auburn, Alabama, and Kentucky.
Yes.
So, first of all, let me apologize up front because I'm the genius who decided to drive to Charlotte. So, I am driving right now. So, I can't examine these paths as we speak.
Okay.
But I'm familiar with them. So, well, I'll tell you my final
Okay, let me give you the questions one by one, and that will arrive at your answer. Okay, would we say, number one, yep, Auburn as a four seed, even though they're in the top five overall in the KenPom, is ridiculous after winning the SEC tournament? How are they a four seed?
Yeah, well, look, I don't disagree. I thought that they would bump themselves up to a three. You know, as we kind of discussed last week, unless there's a need for a contingency bracket, you're done helping yourself for the most part on Saturday.
I hate that.
You know, which is why, well, yeah, I do too, but it's why all these leagues, you know, so like the SEC and the Big Ten, they stay Sunday because that's TV inventory that's valuable, but it doesn't help the teams. They play a day later than like the ACC teams and the Big 12 teams. Big 12. Big 12 is also done Saturday. And then they also don't get the benefit. I agree. They got hosed a little bit. And they to me, have the hardest road because they go through – I mean, I think there are two teams in this tournament that are the clear favorites, and that's in my opinion, Purdue and UConn. And I understand Purdue's history, but I'm picking Purdue to win it. I've believed it all year, and I'm sticking with it. But UConn and Boston is a heck of an assignment. Also, I think, guys, that would be – if I could pick a game – to watch in this tournament, that's probably my game. Auburn against UConn, I think, will be an absolute slugfest. And if Auburn wins, I'm not batting an eyelash. But I have to say they have the toughest path of those teams.
I would agree. And so now let's get to Kentucky. So Auburn as the four seed in UConn's region, you would have to beat them in the Sweet 16 just to get to the Final Eight, let alone to the Final Four. That's a tough road for sure. So let's go to Kentucky, a three seed. They're in the same bracket as Houston, who did look a little bit more beatable late in the season there, but still a very, very talented team for sure. What about Kentucky's draw?
Well, I'll tell you this. Again, I picked them to go to the Final Four, but Oakland can beat Kentucky right off the bat. And I'm a little biased because I love some Golden Grizzlies basketball, my guy Greg Campy. But Oakland has shooting and scoring, and they usually do. I mean, they're not a great defensive team. That's typically how Oakland teams are under Greg Campy. But they can score the basketball at a high level, and it just comes down to, you know, I mean, it really is going to come down to, it's a make or miss game there for me. They're both going to get really good shots. And, of course, Kentucky's talent is – it's one of the most talented backcourts I've seen. Certainly, like, I mean, the freshman alone, and then you throw in Reeves and what he's doing. But I picked them because I think they're going to get on a roll offensively, and I just trust, when it comes down to it, guys, I trust offensively potent teams over defensive teams, which is why I don't have Tennessee or Houston in my Final Four, because I just worry about those droughts that those teams are prone to. But I think Kentucky's draw overall is not terrible. But you know, they got to get that first one and get rolling.
I mean, I guess even with that, Joe. I mean, yes, Kentucky can outscore just about anybody in the country, if not anybody in the country. But I mean, these are one-offs, and if you're not playing at least good defense, which Kentucky has not played all season, yes, they can put the ball in the basket, but we even saw in the SEC tournament, when the ball's not falling in the basket for you and you're not playing defense, you have no shot at winning. I don't care how good your team is. Kentucky has a damn good team, and for all intents and purposes, they should be in the Final Four, but they don't play defense like that.
So here's the only thing I would push back on is they haven't played bad D all year. In fact, the game at Auburn, they played fantastic defense. I don't know where that came from, but they went up to Auburn, which is a very hard place to win, and they played, like, if they can play that defense, and honestly, if they can play defense the way they played at Tennessee, it wasn't great, but it was fine. So that they have examples of being able to do it. You're right, they didn't play great defense against Texas A&M. I mean, those guards for A&M can get cooking, but Kentucky does have rim protection. I mean, they got tons of rim protection. They got seven-footers all over the place, and I'm just expecting on this stage when it really, really matters that they're going to turn it on like they have a few times this year. And I could be wrong, but that's what I'm expecting.
Okay, beside Tennessee, beside Kentucky, we talked about Tennessee. Looking at the SEC, and I'm looking at this Alabama game, honestly. I know Alabama.
Yeah, because that's the team we haven't hit.
Exactly. But Charleston scares me. In one of my brackets, I did pick Charleston to upset.
One of your brackets.
Alabama.
How many brackets?
I'm only filling out two. That's it.
Joe, are you a one bracket guy or multiple brackets?
Yeah, I just do one. I'm a one guy. Stick with it.
I do both. I do two because I do, you know, obviously the one for work, and then I do a separate one.
But you fill out different paths.
Yeah.
In both.
And for the majority of it, it's all really the same with the few here and there. And the few here and there, to me, is that first round matchup with Alabama and Charleston.
I'm worried for them. You know, talk about bad defense. And it's really interesting, too, because – Nate Oates has had in the last few years, he's had a couple teams that ended up top five in defensive efficiency. So when he's had the guys who want to guard, like he wants to play defense. They're supposed to play defense. I mean, all he basically said after their loss in the SEC tournament when they got just run off the floor is, we'll see. We'll see if these guys want to play D. And that just worries me, you know. And I don't think they quite have the offensive balance to offset it. I know they were number one in offensive efficiency for a lot of this season. Yeah. That actually didn't change until Tennessee went in and shut them down. But I don't know. I know Reitzel was hurt and he's back, and maybe that makes more of an impact this weekend. But I think absolutely Charleston is an upset pick to watch against Alabama.
They've given up 100 three different times, Alabama has, in the final I don't know, two or three weeks of the season, against Kentucky, against Florida, both on the road, and then in the SEC tournament again against Florida. Giving up 100, that doesn't sound like a great path, but they can score 100, that's for sure.
Right.
All right, so I want to – D-Mace, let's have the Sparty talk.
Okay.
You and Joe, let's get it out there, the Michigan State guys. Let's get it going.
I mean, and this is why, Joe, I have two brackets. Because one of my brackets is filled out from the heart. And then the other bracket is filled out with my head, okay?
Okay, that makes sense.
After watching Michigan State all season, and listen, they've been in games, and they've lost a lot of close games. But this is not an Izzo team that we're accustomed to seeing for whatever reason. Some nights they look like one of the best teams in the Big Ten, but in other nights they look like one of the worst teams in the Big Ten. How far do you expect this Spartan team to go? Now, they have Mississippi State to start off, but they're also in the same bracket with North Carolina. So if they do get past Mississippi State, their next opponent more than likely will be North Carolina.
Okay, here's a hot take for you. I like their chances considerably better against North Carolina than I do against Mississippi State.
Mm.
So,
why is that?
So first of all, I'm excited to see them, mostly to see some of my MSU writer buddies here in Charlotte. So I'm getting to see them up close. I've been forced to watch Michigan State a lot this year because of my kids. And I got to say, D-Mace, I just think they're a hard team to watch. It's not one of his better teams. You know, they're bad at center. I mean, they don't have a center. And the young guys aren't playing much yet. They had a huge recruiting class, but he's gone with the older guys. I think if anybody who watched what Mississippi State did to Tennessee, that's not a great shooting team. They can be a very offensively stodgy team, but they have length everywhere, length and athleticism. That length bothered Tennessee, and that length will really bother Michigan State. I really like Mississippi State in that game. And Tolu Smith, too. I mean, he's Michigan State centers are going to have a hard time with him. So I like Mississippi State. I like Mississippi State to potentially – I would give both of those MSUs – it's the battle of who gets to be called MSU. I would give both MSUs a real chance. And I know it's going to be a home game for North Carolina. And, look, North Carolina has been a great team this year. But I think that either team could beat them. But especially if it's Michigan State, because, as you know, D-Mates, Tom Izzo, no one's ever been better than him in this tournament on the short turnaround, on the two-day turnaround. In a lot of cases, pulling upsets over higher seeds with that quick turnaround. He's got an incredible formula for scouting and preparing for an opponent, coming up with a game plan. So I do think that you got a chance for Sparty to be in the Sweet 16, but they're going to have to shoot the heck out of the basketball from outside.
Yeah, like, Walker and Hoger, they got to be on.
Yeah. Like, all their shooters have to shoot like crazy, I think, for them to beat Mississippi State.
I agree with both of you that I think North Carolina is the most gettable of the one seeds. And so when I see that 8-9, that's the 8-9 game that I prefer to be in if I'm Michigan State or Mississippi State, because I think North Carolina can be beat. I think they're good, but they're beatable. So, Joe, let's look at Tennessee, who didn't get that one seed. Instead, they're the 2. What do you think of their draw overall, where they are?
Well, I think it's pretty good. You know, when they lost to Kentucky and then lost to Mississippi State, I'm like, well, they blew the one seed, and now they're going to be in the East with UConn. They're going to be the 2. And when they didn't get that, to me, that's the best. The best scenario is still, to me, the 1 with Arizona as your 2. That's their best path to the Final Four. Now, I do think, actually, the West in other spots is a little tougher than the Midwest. I think the Midwest is the easiest region overall, and I like the draw. I do think, now, if they get to Creighton in the Sweet 16, that's a team with, you know, a 7-2 center and a lot of length, and that's a tough matchup. But it's certainly a game that they can win if they play their best. That's the question to me, guys. Can they find their best basketball? I know it's only been 2 games, but the last game was terrible basketball, and they really kind of just gave out in that game, got punched in the mouth and didn't fight back much, and that's concerning. Their role players are slumping from outside. That's concerning. I think that, look, if they can get it going, I think they can absolutely get to that Purdue game, if it is Purdue. And, look, Purdue and Tennessee both. The tournament history for both of these coaches suggests that either one of them could easily not get there. If they do get there, I think you would be talking about an unbelievable game in Detroit to get to the Final Four. And they played a great game in Maui, a 4-point win for Purdue a few months ago. Zach Edey dominated Jonas Adu. They would need that to be, they need the gap to be closed there a little bit. Adu is a huge, huge factor in this tournament. So, They really need James, Vescovy, and Gainey. They need at least one of those guys to kind of get cooking, and if they could just get 2 of them to hit a few shots, I think everything else falls into place for them. They're capable to
get hot for a tournament for sure. But I think that's a point that, Joe, you brought up earlier in the season that I kind of filed away, and then when I started watching for it, I saw it more that as great as Connect is, in a give me the ball, everybody clear out, space, and he'll just make it happen, or set the high screen and he makes it happen. I just don't know that that has flowed real well on some nights, even if Connect ends up with a lot of points. They've won some games where Connect didn't go off. Mm-hmm. They've lost some games where he had 40 points, right? But
yeah.
I still don't know that it meshes real well on a nightly basis where I'm like, that's a well-oiled machine. Would you agree?
I would. You know, the one game where it was incredible, and it's, again, a team I think is good enough to win it all, too, is Auburn. In that game, the give it to Dalton, get out of the way, that's the only way they were winning that game. And he, to his credit, he everything they tried, and sometimes they did double and take the ball in his hands, so you get it to Adu in the middle, and he's good at making a play with an advantage. But for the most part, it was either Connect hitting threes or dunking, right? But I agree, like, they're just a lot better when he's in the flow of the offense, getting shots. Yeah, I mean, when it comes down to it, low on the shot clock, get it to him in the post. But the possessions where it's basically like the whole possession is, the point is, we're going to run him down the baseline, and he's going to cut off, and he's either going to pop off a screen or he's going to high post it, and then we're going to get out of the way and stand there. I don't think you want to do a lot of that, you know, like end of a game or something, and it's like rather than try to even mess with the set, he's cooking, okay, fine. For the most part, though, they need to run their offense, and they need it to be a little bit more balanced. You know, you can get 25 points or so from him and a little bit more balance around the lineup, and they can play at the tempo they prefer, which is way faster this year than they've ever played under Rick Barnes. That, to me, is the formula.
Yeah, to me, I just think for UT, it not only has to be Connect. It has to be – they have to find that second and third score. Now, they have guys that can score, but it just seems like – it seems like sometimes they're waiting on Dalton Connect.
Yeah, to stand around a little bit.
They tend to do it too much, standing around sometimes, watching him. And it can be, you know, it can be beneficial at times, but then it can hurt them, especially when you're in a tournament. Now, during the season, you can do that. But when you're in a tournament, it's one game elimination. There has to be someone else that if the Connect's not hitting, we need at least one or two other scorers that we can depend on. And who are those one or two other scorers going to be, Joe?
Well, most of the year it's been Connect and Ziegler, right? Uh-huh. I mean, Ziegler, since he's kind of found his game, he's been really good. And then the third guy is usually Adu. So that to me is, I think you can count on Ziegler for sure. Hit some shots, run the team. You got to have a great point guard in March. I think he's a great point guard. Sometimes he gets outside himself, takes some risks you don't want to take. But for the most part, I think that's your 1-2 punch. And when it's a 1-2-3 with Adu, now they're in good shape. And a lot of games they've had that. Then to me, it's who's the fourth guy? Just a hit of – because, look, if those three guys are playing like they can, there's just going to be open looks in the corner for some of those other guys, Vescovy, James, and Ganey. And they've got to hit a few, you know, just keep people honest. But, yeah, I think maybe, like, if I had to pick someone, like, to play well every night, I would pick Adu because he can score it. He can hit that mid-range. He can score inside with both hands. He's a rim protector. He's really worked hard to be a better rebounder. And, you know, he did not play well in the last game against Tolu Smith. They need him to come out and give him that so they can pound it in the post a little bit, too, when they need one. Awaka, pound it in the post to him. Get a couple buckets, you know? They've got all the pieces to win six games. They really do. But lately, they haven't all been functioning all that well.
All right, Joe, before we let you go and drive safely to Charlotte, give me your quick take on what you see for the Vanderbilt search right now. What is your formula you think they should follow here?
Well, you know, after I read Brendan Quinn from The Athletic wrote a piece on Will Wade today, which is really fascinating, and he's just completely embraced the villain role. He's from Nashville. Go get Will Wade. Go get Will Wade.
That's not happening. They're not going to get Will Wade.
I know. That's another hot take for you. No, I know they're not going to. But it's going to be really interesting to watch his career because if you can win like he can win and coach like he can coach, and now it's a totally different landscape. I think it's going to be someone in the high major realm is going to grab him.
But he's got a show cause, Joe. People don't seem to put that on the headline. But when you have a show cause for a year, that doesn't make you very hireable, I think, at this level, especially at Vanderbilt. So it's not going to happen. So it's not worth discussing. So beyond that.
Right. I think Chris Mack is I think it's worth the exploration. It's a name that's popped up a lot.
Okay, are you worried about the baggage there, about the whatever happened that I don't know all the specifics of the extortion or whatever that got him fired and they were losing as well at Louisville?
Absolutely. I mean, all that stuff has to be closely vetted. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that went on there that wasn't great. That makes him a little not to the level of a Will Wade radioactive, but a little bit. So absolutely. But I still think that's worth vetting, worth looking at. I mean, I like Schertz a lot from Indiana State, so I believe he's going to St. Louis. If I'm correct, I don't know if that's official yet, but it looks like that way. Abdul Rahim is, I think, a really enticing possibility. I think Kelsey at Charleston, who we just mentioned, playing Alabama, I think that's an absolute name that you have to look at. And look, I'm big on Casey Alexander, guys. I am. I mean, I know, Belmont hasn't had the wild success the last couple of years. They've moved up, and I think they've held their own pretty well in the MVC, and it's been really tough at the portal with him. Now, the portal giveth and taketh away. That he got an elite D a year ago for Vanderbilt, and now he's back in the portal. Casey Alexander is an outstanding coach, and I think sometimes schools like Vanderbilt, it's like you don't want to just look in your backyard. It doesn't, it almost seems like you're settling for something, but I hope they resist that urge. I think Casey like a courtesy call when they hired Jerry Stackhouse, and I don't think they seriously looked at him. They need to seriously look at him. I think he can hang in there with anyone on this list that you want to name. And talk about someone who knows the lay of the land of high school recruiting in the state of Tennessee. I mean, he's ready to go right now. So those are the names that come immediately to mind.
I'm with you on that front. I think they should take a hard look at Casey Alexander, which they have not done before. And they never did with Rick Byrd or even going back before Don Meyer. And I think it's time. I think Casey Alexander has done enough that they should take a long look at him for sure. Joe, we're way past the clock here. We have ignored it. The suit's going to get on us. Yeah. He's going to give us a slap on the wrist. But we've enjoyed talking to Joe. Joe, have a safe travel. Enjoy the March Madness, and we'll talk to you when you get back.
Okay, guys. It was fun. Thanks for having me.
All right. Hopefully we sped up Joe's drive. You got to kill time when you're on the highway, right? Might as well talk to us.
He probably covered about 20 miles.
Exactly. Well, I don't know how – if he drives as fast as you, D-Mace.
Maybe 40.
Maybe 40. All right. We're coming back with more Caroline, Willie, and D-Mace after this. It's that time of the year. Some March Madness action. Tournament starts tonight. Of course, the Predators are in action tonight as well against the Sharks. So it is truly March Madness. So much going on. And we're here covering it for you. And we are doing so from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. We're at Barrel House today, and it'll be the Predators and the Sharks. You've got something that you've got on your mind, text us, 615-737-1025, brought to you by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. So, D-Mace, what do you think? I mean, your opinion about the profile of the next coach. Forget about the name right now. Like, because you've got a Chris Mack out there.
Yeah.
And you've got a series of coaches from the level of school that I would say are not that coach, whoever he is and wherever he's from, whether you go out to Washington State or you go up to Colgate or you go over to Indiana State, wherever these coaches go, they haven't been in the game of huge NIL money, right? So that person would have to adjust to this level of SEC where you got to be in that game.
Exactly.
Chris Mack has won a lot, but I would even argue that at Louisville, by the time he was out, it wasn't really when the NIL took full shape last year. So would you look for a coach that has played the NIL game a little bit more, or are you okay with taking a mid-major coach who's been extremely successful and saying that coach will adjust?
Oh, man, that's difficult because it seems like...
I think it's a tough question
to
answer.
Yeah, that's because it seems like that's what you've done with the last two coaches, whether it was Jerry Stackhouse or Bryce Drew. You did that with both coaches. They'll figure it out once they get to the SEC. Once they get here, we give them enough time, they'll figure it out. Well, they didn't figure it out, and they both end up getting fired. To me, it has to be a coach that understands, one, you know, understand the landscape of recruiting now. He must understand the NIL. But then the university – they have to give him the tools that he needs, frankly. And I'm not just talking because we discussed this. I believe it was yesterday or at the end of last week. Listen, these kids are, you know, 10 years ago, you can wow them with the facilities. You saw every team around the country that could – put the money in the facilities. What were they doing? They were putting money in the facilities, having all this stuff, the one-stop shop. You ain't got to go nowhere. You can get your hair cut. You can get your car washed. If you got a dog, you can get your dog groomed here.
Everything. The barbershop was a must.
Exactly.
In those things.
Everything. You need a hairdresser. We got a hairdresser for the win. We got all everything that you need, you know, to thrive as an athlete. We have it here. We paid all the money. That was cool. That's cool. But nowadays, these kids want to know, okay, I understand you got that, but that school has it. That school over there has it. Oh, by the way, that school right down the street, they have it too. What else are you going to give me? And when I mean what else, I mean NIL money.
Yeah.
I'm not talking about no longer are facilities top of the chart anymore. You know, when I'm picking colleges, I believe when these kids are picking colleges nowadays, especially you're talking about the 4- and 5-star kids, they're saying, how much money are you giving me?
It's a given.
Yeah.
It's a given.
Because they figure, okay, if I'm being recruited here at Vanderbilt, Vanderbilt has upgraded their facilities. That's great. But you know who else upgraded their facilities? Alabama, Mississippi State. All these schools have upgraded their facilities. What are you going to give me?
I do think the coach has to be given a good sense of what the budget will be NIL-wise. And I'm told, again, this is just what I've been told, that they are now in the game way more than they were at the beginning. They were behind, and I think now they have a reasonable shot. I think it's, for what I've been told, it would be an excuse to say that they have nothing, right, that they're not in the game at all. Now, can anybody compete with what Kentucky could probably do? I don't think so. But you have to have a reasonable way of going about it. But that aside, like I think that's a given. But at the same time, you also have to have your own formula at Vanderbilt. I don't think you're going to out Kentucky. I don't think you're going to out Alabama. You're not going to out Tennessee.
Well, you can. You can from the sense
of... I don't think so. That's not how Vanderbilt basketball has been successful. No. I think you have to have your unique brand that finds the niche, that has players saying, yeah, that's where I want to go. It's
but it
Nashville.
Hasn't worked
it's
up until this
school.
Point. Since
not in this era of NIL. Uh-huh. And that's the trick, is you got to do it now in this. But I'm saying traditionally, I think that's how Vanderbilt has done it. And so that's where... That's where I think still you have to have a blend of traditionally what's worked with modernizing with this NIL game that you got to play in. That's
well,
the trick.
You have to play in it, but I don't think the model, the let's just say the Gene Stallings sort of model. It doesn't
Kevin
work.
Stallings,
it,
yeah.
Kevin Stallings,
yeah.
Not Gene.
Gene Stallings,
Stallings
would be an interesting.
Yeah,
he had a great model.
Yeah, he had a great
back
model.
In the
exactly.
Day, yeah.
Absolutely. I understand that. Kevin Stallings.
Yeah.
That model doesn't work anymore, will it? As much as it sounds good, and I get it, I understand it. But that if they were in the Ivy League, then yeah, that model works. Okay, if they're in a lower, like say, you know, the MEAC or something.
No, I know what you're saying.
It works there, but it doesn't work in the SEC.
Shane Foster, and you have you know, Jeffrey Taylor, and you have, you know, Festus Ezeli, you can win.
Exactly.
And they did win. He had excellent players, like John Jenkins. I mean, he found a way to get those kind of players.
But NIL was never involved.
Right. And see, that's the thing. Like, hey, Kevin, so I have not ever asked Kevin Stallings, you know, would you want to make it work in the NIL era? I don't know that that's his cup of tea, right? I know my coach, Eddie Folger, he's kind of looking at this is a new world
for me,
right? And so there are coaches that kind of like, I think Nick Saban has sit there and go, this is not the world I used to live in. This is world is changing. So you have to be willing to adapt. But I think Kevin Stallings' tenure, number one, is looking a lot better historically every year that goes
farther
by.
Farther and farther we get removed from his tenure, but looks better.
But even Jerry Stackhouse, some players, there are NBA players that have gone through Vanderbilt that were there. Obviously, Bryce Drew had Darius Garland, but you go down the line. You have Aaron
Darius
Nesmith.
Darius didn't play for him as much because he was injured.
He got hurt, yeah. And that's where it all started to really crater. But, you know, just in recent years, Luke Kornet, Darius Garland, Saban Lee, Aaron Nesmith, there are guys that have gone on. So they're getting a decent caliber. It's just the collection of surrounding cast, right? I think you can get a great player or two in basketball and have excellent role players, and you have a winning team. So the role players, I think that's where they have to make up ground. I think that's where Jerry Stackhouse really went downhill. He had a lot of okay players playing different roles. It was hard to tell, and the pieces just weren't good enough collectively.
Yeah, but to me, I just think if you're going to be in the game, you got to be in it. If you're going to, if you want to win in this conference, whether it be basketball or football, you can't dip your toe in it. You got to submerge yourself in it. And know that.
So is that like buying 3-star players and everybody else on a different level? Like that, I don't know how everybody does do it. Like, are they paying every kid on the team $100,000? I don't know what some teams do or don't do. Or is it just by the individual? Because
I guess
you got to have chemistry.
You have
right. You don't want everybody in the locker room going, "Well, I'm better than this guy. He's making $100,000. I'm only making $10,000."
But coming out of high school, obviously there's a
because you don't know. You don't know
exactly
who's going to be good.
But then,
right? I thought I was going to be good coming out of high school.
But after you start playing, you start to realize who the players are and who the players aren't. The guys that are going to be a top level players, and then the guys that are going to be role players on your team. You need at least one, possibly two top tier players, and then everybody else can be role players. Obviously, you need some shooting. You need a big fella in the middle, not necessarily score points, but just be a presence in the middle in college basketball. We see what Purdue is able to do with their size. We talk about Kentucky and their size. We see what they're able to do. Vanderbilt, to me, regardless of who they pick for their coach, they gotta give that coach an opportunity to truly go out and recruit. And I'm not gonna buy into this notion that, hey, listen, some of these kids can't get into Vanderbilt. Well, why not? We got kids going to Duke. We got kids going to Carolina. We got kids going to Stanford. We got kids going to these schools that we deem academic schools. Kids are getting in those schools, and they're excelling not only on the court, but they're excelling in the classroom.
I think that's been improved a lot over the years at Vanderbilt. I think the transfer stuff is a little tricky.
Now, that may be – I don't
different.
Know anything about
but
that
But I think
in
coming out of high
Van.
School, I think the standard of getting in, I don't think you're going to see the Ron Mercer kind of thing that bogged them down back in the day. All right, when we come back, we'll have our final segment, wrapping things up from Barrel House, Predators and Sharks later tonight. Stay tuned. One of the classics from back in the day. Men at Work. I had the tape of the songs. Men at Work Greatest Hits is a good one. All right, D-Mace.
Yes.
You guys hit this early in the show. I didn't get to talk to you guys about this. But trading down from 7, what do you think the chances are?
I think it's 50-50, honestly.
And how far down are we talking here?
That's the issue. How far down do you go? You're at 7 right now. I don't think you can go past 12 or 13.
Is the idea that you would go down and still get the left tackle?
And still get who you want. And if you're eyeing left tackle as the position you want in the first round, then one of those two tackles need to be there, whether it's Fashanu or Ault, if indeed you have them ranked as the top two tackles. On the board. I don't know where the Titans have their offensive tackles.
To me,
right?
If you could execute that move, to me, ideally it would be the left tackle. If you got to trust your scouts or whatever. You need an impact guy, whoever it is. But if you could slide down four or five spots, get the guy that you want all along, and get the third round pick back, for example, and maybe another pick down the road, that would be the game to look into.
Yeah, it would be.
And you may not know until the day of the draft you could do that, right?
Minutes before, you may not know. I think they do need a third-round pick because, again, they have to build this roster through the draft. They can't – you know, you can supplement through, you know, free agency, but they have to build this draft. If they want sustained success, they have to build this through the draft. So, to me, if they can get an opportunity to get a third-round pick this year – they need to get it. Now, how do they get it? It's possible that they can get it, you know, going from 7 to maybe 11, 12, somewhere around there. You move down, pick up a third-round pick this year, and now you're able to address, if you want, you're able to address the offensive line, you're able to address, to me, the cornerback position, and you can double back and come and get you a wide receiver, a younger wide receiver that's going to be able to grow with your quarterback.
We looked at the odds today from Jimmy Shapiro. The Titans are 150-1 to win the Super Bowl, by far the lowest in the division, and third from the bottom of the entire NFL. And the other thing that we have put as a point of emphasis in the, I know they're excited about the free agents they've got, and hopefully that group will be money well spent. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, we looked at three drafts. Mm-hmm. There are, you can count on one hand, the amount of expensive second contracts among players that they drafted in those 3 years. And there may not be a single one.
Yeah.
And that's where the well has gone dry. That's why they've got so many different holes to fill. And it's hard to fill all those holes from free agency. They desperately need to string together another good draft. Last year's draft, not bad. It's got a chance to be good. This year's draft has got to be good as well.
Again, we go back to, again, I'm not blaming Robinson or Vrabel. They're gone. I'm not blaming them. But over the last three seasons, the draft picks that have been brought here to Nashville, there may be two, maybe three that
if,
you think
if a couple of those guys have great years this year,
exactly,
which we don't know,
that you think about signing to a second contract. That is not good for a organization that is trying to build their team. In order to build your team, you got to have success via the draft, and you supplement through free agency. Get older guys that are on second contracts. Maybe some end up being great players. Maybe some just end up being really good role players. But you can't try to build your team through free agency. You got to build it through the draft. And because they didn't draft well, for whatever reason, they didn't draft well in the prior 3 years, the drafting it started last year, and it must continue this year in regards to their draft.
All right, after the Preds-Sharks game tonight, I'm going to do my brackets, D-Mace. You said you have two brackets, one with the heart and one with the head.
Exactly.
Who are your two champions?
In my heart,
in your heart?
Michigan State. Yeah.
So you have it? Okay. And with the head?
In my head, I hadn't picked that one yet.
Okay, so keep thinking about that. All right, Stillman & Company from right here at Barrel House coming up next.
Be love and love on your people.
Talk to you tomorrow, everybody.